Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. We're taking the show on the road. I'm having the Crab Cake Tour. Even though the Towson Tigers lost, we're still going to CVP on Friday. We'll be there this week, giving away the Maryland Lottery scratch-offs and the Magic 8-Ball as we get into spring season. We will also be in my, I don't call it my homeland. I'm really from Dundalk. It's Essex. We borrow it. It's like their 51st state, if you will, in Essex. We're going to go eat some pizza at Pizza John's next Friday. So come on out. My man Dave Shinen from the Washington Post will be coming over. A little bit of a baseball preview because the season begins the Thursday after. Luke and I will be in the great Canada nation, the 51st state, as they call it there. We won't call it that as we go in. I have my Canada hat around here somewhere. I am going to wear that in. Luke and I are going to be doing opening day at the Sky Dome. If I just talk about Geddy Lee, maybe they'll be nice to me up in Canada right now. We have great things going on in Baltimore, and I try to focus on cool people doing stuff and building things. And I've spent so much time on addiction over the course of time, in all sorts of ways. I mean, going back into the 90s when I had addiction clinics and we would bring folks in like Robbie Stempler to tell a story. He is a Baltimore guy doing a pretty cool thing here, taking a look at addiction. And I guess the one thing that I noticed on Hygieia and recently read a piece on 995, great work with Vicky and the folks locally here featuring local people. Just that, how many people I know that went to addiction once, twice, three times, four times, how many I've had to pray over, talk about, honor in after their death. Both my parents were alcoholics. Pretty candid about that. I have not battled that addiction during my life, but I know many, many people who have and have come back. And more than that, it's these incredible stories. I had a guy named TJ Humphreys on last month who was the big lottery winner up in Harford County, tickets for 20 years, helping people. There's so many people that come back from addiction that help people. And Robbie Stemp was one of those guys, and I'm looking forward to meeting him here. And California rock and roll show tune, sex, drugs, rock and roll, California, all that good stuff. And you're back here helping people. It is a pleasure to have you on. And first things first, up on LinkedIn, I saw Emily Keller. So when I see her, she's one of my Hagerstown people, the former mayor, the good mayor. She'll always be a mayor, I guess. And it's good to have you on. You have quite a story, man.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you having me.
Well, let's start at the beginning. You're from Baltimore, are you not? And returning home here, and certainly your life and pathway. I don't know, in 2010, you thought you'd be talking to some guy like me on the radio about something like this in 2025, right?
Definitely not. It's funny. I'll say that getting addicted to drugs is the best thing that ever happened in my life. Reconnected with my best friend through going to rehab coincidentally at the same time, who is now my wife, and we have two children, and we wouldn't be talking right now if I didn't get addicted to drugs. So
Well, man, that's a hell of a first thesis on the TED Talk you just gave me there. The first 30. It's like you've done this before. Well, give your story. I mean, you're a McDonough kid, local kid, right? And went off to college, good family,
right.
living the life in Miami, California. You've been a lot of places. Right now, you're like 5 miles from where you were born, probably, right?
Probably less than actually. I'm in Pine Hills and yeah, I was born and raised here. Family's deeply rooted here, both grandparents born and raised here. Grew up, went to McDonough. My grandfather was a successful entrepreneur. He had Fox Automotives, so kind of always grew up.
My family bought a car from your family back up on a hill up Pedonia back in the day with a big fox on it. Big inflatable fox, right?
Oh yeah, yep. I
So
remember
you were a kid visiting your grandfather there, maybe,
I
huh?
would run around those dealerships as a kid. Almost every Saturday and any day off at school. Always had fun, and grandpa really instilled that like entrepreneurial business side in me.
Can you sing any of the jingles or no? Do you have any of those in your? Yeah, I bet you do. So yeah, you're smiling. You know, that's how radio and media works. You sing a jingle in 1978, you remember it in
If you ask
2025.
my grandfather if he was still alive, that is what changed it, was radio and TV ad and directory. We are a direct from the factory outlet dealer. Every car dealer is, but just wording it that way made it seem like Chevrolet was different than, Fox was different than any other Chevrolet.
Major cars smell fresher somehow, factory direct, right?
Redirect. But yeah, so, grew up here, had a county upbringing, very, privileged upbringing. Went to Indiana, lasted 2 years, dropped out to start a hip hop record label.
Why
Wanted
did you go to Indiana? What were you going to be when you grow up? I mean, everybody has a different pathway the day they leave for college and thinking what they're going to do.
I mean, at that point, it was just, I was young, man. It was party girls and, wanting to have fun and business. I mean, I went there for business school, so it was always an entrepreneurial path. Grew up a computer nerd, so definitely wanted to do something, tech related. But I was, in hindsight, I wish I had more direction,
But you
than.
find that along lines of what a liberal arts education is supposed to do for all of us, right?
So,
Hip hop music, huh? You were going to be like a Beastie Boy.
well, it feels really weird saying this now. So, I'm prefacing it with that, but I wanted to be the, Diddy of Baltimore, but not like Bad Boy. So I looked at hip hop as, these brands that represented cities. So you had like So-So Def in Atlanta, you had Bad Boy and Rockefeller in New York, you had Death Row in California, and like Baltimore didn't have
It didn't
that.
have a Suge Knight, but it did have it had
Didn't have,
we had Cisco, you know what I mean? And we had the Thong Song, we had things going on here, right?
Mario. We had so I managed an extremely talented artist, DJ producer. His name was Blackstar, or is Blackstar. And ended up moving out to LA and, worked with some cool artists and did some cool things over the years.
Is this in the aughts? What are we talking about here? What's the time frame?
So this is like early 2003 to like 12-ish,
There you
11-ish.
go. I was perfectly right. Okay, I was on it. So you go out to California, you're involved in this, making some money, living your best life, right? I mean, using business skills that you were taught, right? To follow music you love, the lifestyle you thought you loved, right?
Yes, really, realized
California knows how to party, right? California, right? In the city, right?
It took me a good, I don't know, I probably lived there 8 years. It took me a good like 6 years to realize that this is all for the wrong reasons. And what I was doing, I remember being 20 and writing this list of like goals. And if I could check off each one of these goals, then I'm gonna be happy, and like life is gonna be great and whatever. And I checked off all those, that list. And I remember being at Coachella, which is a big music festival, on stage, headlining act, looking out at like 100,000 people and just like being miserable, and just being like, it was like a moment of clarity almost, where like this is all for the wrong reason. I'm wanting to be in this entertainment space, not because it's fun, but because of an outcome, because it looks cool, because it sounds cool, because I can talk about being in the studio with whoever and smoked a blunt with this one, and whatever. Can I say that on here?
Yeah, of course.
But just all the wrong reasons. Not enjoying the ride at all, but searching for an outcome. And long story short, I was very depressed and always battled with mental health, depression and anxiety.
Perhaps
And
that's why you medicated to begin with. That's kind of hand in hand.
found Vicodin, which was a great solution for depression and anxiety. And somehow, over a 9-10 month period, I went from taking like a pill to 50 Vicodin a day. I would wake up 7 a.m., top 10 in my mouth, and it was routine, and no one knew. Had I mean, it's actually ironic because people thought I was doing, because I was always a big partier, but if I drank with all that Vicodin, I would get nauseous. So I wasn't drinking, I wasn't doing any other drugs, but no one knew I was taking this Vicodin. So people thought I was like sober and doing great. But meanwhile, I'm, even like the girl that I
What were
was.
the side effects of that? Because I interviewed Brett Favre in the middle of his mess. I'm talking like 1997. He had just won the Super Bowl. He came to Ed Block out at Martin's West, high as a kite. I have pictures next to him. He was really out of it. And then the thing broke about that not far after. It's the first time I had heard of the drug, right? And now I hear about it a lot post-op surgery. My wife has had cancer twice, so I'm familiar with all sorts of weird drugs that I never would have known if she'd had leukemia twice. But the Vicodin is a, we're going back
Opiate.
25 years now of that word being associated with anybody, football, anybody that knew anything about Brett Favre, that was the drug. And it was commonly prescribed after knee surgeries, back surgeries to otherwise people who thought that they were immune to addiction of any kind and said, I don't even drink, man. But man, that shit makes me feel good, man. Like there definitely was, I've heard that story from athletes all of,
Yeah.
since before I was gray, Robbie.
Because it's all, I mean, it's the opiates, right? And Purdue Pharma, these aren't addictive, and getting the FDA to, I don't want to go down that mess of a
Oh,
train.
we could do that all day, but I hear you. I mean, there's a reason all these drugs are on the street. We're blaming it on fentanyl and all this stuff. It's a human condition, right? I mean, more than things that are being produced out there, there is a human condition that we have to stop people from wanting to have that feeling, right?
Well, yeah, I think it's actually more of a mental health epidemic than a drug epidemic. I mean, they call them pain killers because they kill pain, not just physical. I mean, they'll kill mental pain too. And Purdue Pharma flooded the market with opioids, and then you take opioids away, then everyone's got to turn to heroin because they're already hooked. They got no choice at that point. And yeah, now today we got fentanyl. And I mean it's
There's nowhere in the country you go where you don't go into a CVS and they've got like the neosinephrine locked up
yeah.
because of television shows that show people how to. I don't even know what the hell these show. I've never watched Breaking Bad or any of that stuff. And again, and I'm curio sponsored and I talk about all sorts of things that the plant does that don't get you high that make that can be helpful drugs. But the addictive part of the opioid addiction, and it brought me to Emily and her run as in Hagerstown as mayor, and now as the opioid chief, as directed by Wes Moore. I talk to her every summer about this, and I don't know if we're making a dent at all, but I know people like you have come back here into the community to work with humans who have problems here, and that's really what the root of your business is all about here right now, right?
Exactly. I moved back here 8 years ago with a mission to build an addiction treatment ecosystem that could treat any kind of person as long as they were willing. Medicaid, commercial, I don't care what socioeconomic class you are, we can accept you. We take all payers. And my goal over the next several years is to build as many of these centers in Maryland as needed to, I mean, because Baltimore has over twice the amount of overdoses than the second highest area in the US. Think about that for a second. We are over 2x the second highest.
Why? Why is that? Why is Baltimore a place where there's
I
more addiction?
it's funny. I was talking to the Baltimore Sun last week, and for some reason, Baltimore became the heroin capital of the world in the 90s. There's not like, there's no drug kingpin like Big Meech or like that we could really Freeway Ricky Ross or these celebrity or pseudo celebrity type drug dealers that brought crack to market or whatever. But for some reason, Baltimore City became the heroin capital of the world. And then when OxyContin hit, it took all the suburban kids and got them hooked. Then they pull all the opiates off the market. So now they're going into the city to cop heroin, and now it's fentanyl. So if you're the heroin capital in the world in the 90s, it only makes sense that you're going to have the largest overdose crisis with fentanyl hitting the market. I mean, it's worse than I could have imagined. Because, after backing up a little, when I got addicted to Vicodin, I went to treatment in South Florida, and realized really then that like entertainment business not for me. And while I was in treatment, I guess this is like my entrepreneurial brain. I noticed that everything they were doing, like on the business side, was on paper, and that was shocking. And like, this is just a little over 12 years ago now. Like, how aren't you guys using computers? Like, there's not like a medical record system or something. So, while I was in treatment, I wireframed, which is like a fancy word of like kind of designing or scoping out a EMR system for addiction treatment centers. Long story short, got out of treatment, met up with a group of people and built this company called Kipu, Kipu, which is an EMR software. So that was actually like my first entry into the business side of addiction treatment. During that time, I opened up some centers in California because I had a lot of clients that needed detox, and sold that company June of 23. But always planned to, move back to Baltimore to build the ecosystem here. So like I'm a startup guy. So once, I don't know, it took us probably 5, 6 years to get Kipu to a point where it was like, big business now. We got a couple hundred employees. It's, very departmentalized, predictable. It's very boring to me. So that's when I moved back to Baltimore, and started on this mission of building these properties. And it took me. So the picture that you saw with Emily and Wes and I is at the ribbon cutting of this detox I built in Middle River, 50-bed detox that I built from
Now
the
that's
ground.
my side of town, right? We're going to be in Essex next week. I think you knew that at Pizza John's. And
Yeah.
I'm from Dundalk, and my dad worked at the mill. My dad came to Baltimore and Essex in the 1940s to build bombers at Martin Marietta, just the east side of town. And the devastation of economy, the next thing that happens, right, is addiction. In any that's an American story. I don't know if that's a worldwide story, but that's been the story in this country, that the when the economics goes down and the jobs go down, the addiction goes up.
I think that that's what happened. I mean, if you look back at Baltimore in the, 50s, 60s, like it was a thriving African American community. And there were all of these, steel, the job force was thriving. And then they took all of these factory, all the factories shut down, all the union jobs went away. And, the 80s hit, and it's like a forgotten generation. And now you're like seeing, I was talking to a guy yesterday who was in my office, who sir from Baltimore. He actually managed Mario, coincidentally. But he was telling me when he was serving time, he had a guy in jail with him who was addicted to drugs and, did some robbery. His son was in jail at the same time, did drugs, addicted to drugs, did a robbery. And the grandson was in jail at the same time because of drugs and a robbery. So that's three generations in jail together for the same exact reason. I mean, what has gone on in Baltimore City over the last several decades is it's almost just like a forgotten, I mean, that's why I don't, you read the Baltimore Banner and New York Times piece over the summer. I mean, I was, are you familiar with that?
To educate our audience. By the way, Robbie Stemple is our guest from Hygieia, a local guy. We could talk Ravens and Orioles and do all that stuff. We're talking more important stuff with him in regard to substance abuse and addiction and what's going on here, literally on the streets of Baltimore, where people like you are stepping in and saying, I've got a different way to treat people, right?
Yeah, trying. The model is definitely broken. I think we need to
What did
focus.
you see about that that was broke? Let's go back to Coachella. You're on stage. You're high as a kite on Viking, and nobody knows. They don't smell weed. They don't say
That's
they don't have
before Viking.
liquor, any of that stuff, right? Like none. Were was anybody in your world aware of 50 Viking in a day? That's crazy.
No. And then the Coachella, I wasn't on Vicodin yet. I wasn't even like on, you know, I mean, I partied, but like didn't have a drug problem.
Viking, it made you happy. You were seeking happiness with it, correct?
Well, I got so depressed that when I got introduced to Vic, I don't even like remember how someone handed me a pill and I took it and
But
was like,
you didn't have a back surgery. I mean, a lot of
no.
people with Vicodin, that's
So,
their introduction to it. I didn't realize it was such a street thing. Like it
I
was a
know.
joy drug in that way.
This was at a party, and you know, it's that LA scene, and it was like, oh, this is what I've been missing. Like this is amazing. Like, you know, and I can't even tell you how it went from that to a month later, I'm taking it every day. Like I don't know how that even happened. But to the point where it got to the, you know, because your tolerance gets so high that one, you know, the effect of one changes to two, to four, to eight, to 10, you know. So when it got to the 50 a day, no one knew. I mean, I was living with a girl that at least I was planning on proposing to. She had no idea. I mean, no, the only person that knew I was on Vicodin was my drug dealer. That was it. I was, you know, functioning, you know, I'm very, OCD routine. So even like in that sense, it was like woke up at this time, took the pills at this time, took the pills at that time, took
How long
the
did this go on, Robbie?
probably on a daily basis, 10, 11 months.
Okay, so inside of a year, you're like, I got a problem. Where's your bottom on this? I mean, were
Need to
you weren't
stop.
robbing people to get your drugs, right? You had money, right? You know, a lot of those kinds of things that other people do when they get jacked up on this stuff, they break laws and things. You were just abusing yourself, basically, right?
It got to the point where I was so miserable, and I realized that, like, you know, this isn't maintainable. Like at this, you know, the amount that I'm consuming is not maintainable. And, you know, to me, like heroin, then you're like a drug addict, you know, like it wasn't like there were strong, I don't know. There were stronger stuff out there, I guess, that would have been cheaper. But my girlfriend at the time was going home back to Atlanta for 5 days over Christmas. And my plan was that I'm going to detox myself. And I spaced out enough pills so that I would drop her off at the airport and then, you know, stay in my house for 5 days and get myself completely off of this because I knew she wanted to, you know, get engaged. And, you know, I was like, I can't manage business, engagement, wedding, and, you know, Vicodin addiction all at once. So I get back to the house. I think I lasted 3 hours before I was like, all right, I can't do this. And went and called my drug dealer and, you know, spent the next 5 days taking drugs. And then when she got back, sat her down and said, hey, I got a, you know, problem. I'm, you know, been taking Vicodin for this amount for this long, and I'm gonna go to treatment. I'd set up treatment while she was away, so she took me to the airport December 31st. I don't know why I didn't wait a, I don't know, New Year's Eve. Dropped me off at the airport, flew to Florida, went into
Why
treatment.
Florida, by the way? Like, 'cause I mean, where
I
it
called a
feels
friend.
to me like people pick addiction centers and or they're picked for them in many cases. People know they need to get help. Some people go in, don't really want help, go in fighting. You know, like the Amy Winehouse song, right? Or God rest her soul. But like, and then some people say, I want this, not that, that, not the other. I want to go to Florida, not Minnesota. I want to be inside out. I don't know what choices you're given. You opted. Nobody put you in handcuffs and threw you in, right? You
Oh
chose.
yeah, no, this was solely like, you know, I was
That's
fortunate.
unusual, though, correct?
Very lucky, yes, to hit,
Okay.
we'll call it, it's called an emotional bottom, where
Okay.
there was nothing else that, you know, I'm fortunate that it wasn't, you know, legal, money, whatever. It was just solely emotionally, I want to not feel like this anymore and I want to get help. And I had a friend that had dealt with that and called him, and he was like, go here. And I said, okay. And flew to Florida and went to treatment. Yeah, that's.
What did you know about treatment at that time? I mean, you're in a music.
I
Now,
mean, I
other
knew.
people, you weren't the first guy you knew that went to rehab, right? I mean,
No,
so
not
yeah.
really.
Did you know people who had been successful, or people who had failed, or people who had come back and said, "Don't you don't want to go there?" Like Jack Nicholson and One Flew Over the Cuckoo. You know, like that's not a place you want to go. Obviously, none of us want to go there, right?
I wouldn't. I think that that's part of the stigma that needs to change. That, like, you don't want to go to the, I don't know, the orthopedic when you break your arm, but it's not, you don't think of it the same way as like you don't want to go. But that's really like how it should be thought of
You should
is,
think about the place that's going to heal you or help you heal, the
yeah.
people that are there, right?
Absolutely. No, it's not, but yeah, no, I knew. I mean, there's a family history of mental health and addiction. My best friend in the world went to rehab in and out since we were 18, and unfortunately overdosed and died about, I don't know, 7 years ago. That was like when he died. His name was Larry. That is when I was like, I'm done with, EMR and business to business. Like, I really want to just focus on treating people and trying to build, facilities that are actually going to like help people and not deal with treatment center owners anymore. Because,
Now I know why you're friends with Emily Keller, because she told me the same exact story of losing a friend. It inspired her an insurance business to run for mayor. She's now the czar of the state. And many of you do have a story of like losing someone so important to you that it moved your
oh,
life into this direction, right?
yeah. Yeah. Emily, I've been fortunate enough to know what Governor Moore for a little while now, and he introduced us, and she's been she amazing. I mean, thankfully for both of them, Governor Moore and her, that they at least understand that there is a horrible issue here. Now it's how do we like make a change and fix it.
Well, and also the government getting involved in it, right? Because this was always somebody else's problem for 50 years. And that's the city, that's the county, that's Annapolis, that's the. So, I
And a
mean,
lot of hiding it too. I
oh, yeah,
mean,
we don't have that problem in Hagerstown because we don't have people of color there. We don't have this or that. We have Republicans, we don't have Democrats. No, we have a problem
everywhere.
everywhere in the state, everywhere in this country. Robbie Stempler is here. He's representing a company called Hygieia. We haven't even talked about your prime business more and just telling your story. And again, we could just sit here and talk about Lamar and Derrick Henry and D Hop. We could do all of that in the
What about
football
the
stuff.
D-Hop?
Yeah, but you see, I mean, it's fresh. It's all fresh here. Tell me about Hygieia. Tell me about what your story, because I've read about your work and being here, but you have a real vision and you're not doing this to take it to California. You're already taking it. You're back here and
Yeah.
really finding your roots in Baltimore and your family, McDonough, and all the things going on here in the community about how your treatment is different, in the way that you saw it from the inside. So please tell me, if people come to you and they have a loved one, what is that pathway to finding someone like you and finding a better future, quite frankly?
I mean, to reach out to us directly, go to hygieia.health.
Got to spell that for me.
Hygieia dot health. That's it.
That's it. Simple.
Hygieia dot health. And call, and 24/7 available, and can accept admissions 24/7. Currently we have 3 locations, all levels of care. Like I said, the 50-bed detox, built from the ground up, took, I don't know, 5 years and probably $20 million investment over those 5 years, all privately funded. But I knew I needed to partner with the government. That was my thing, was like, we need to all get aligned and the private and public sector need to work together to solve this. So let me like kind of show and prove what I can do and what I want to do and paint my vision like so that it's actually a reality and you can see it. And then you guys will, trust that it's not just, some BS and all the fraud that's going on right now. If there was an article a couple days ago about the Medicaid fraud in Baltimore City with a substance abuse centers, and it's bad. It's
Well, what makes your treatment and what was your treatment in Miami? I mean, you seem to have come out of this pretty quickly on Vicodin and finding life and your own business and selling businesses. What changed things for you? Obviously, the sickness itself and feeling like you didn't want to feel that way. That's the first admission to saying, I want to feel differently. I would think a lot of these places are very educational, supportive, finding goals, hobbies, dreams, visions, self-studying, I would think.
There.
How long was your treatment and what
I
if
mean, treatment itself for me was 30 days, and then I went to a sober living for 4 months. But I think, I don't know. I hate labels. But it's a lifelong process. I'm still like I see a therapist twice a week still. I mean, and that's what works for me to stay in check and make sure that I'm not going the wrong way or
well,
feeling good.
accountability is everything, right?
But I think that that's like we're all searching for like some sort of peace and purpose. And the beauty of treatment is it gives you like that time out where you can really psychoanalyze yourself and hopefully discover, what that is that gets you going, like, 'cause that's different for everyone. But I believe every human has some like gift or some passion that, they either are too scared to go after or don't know about or have given up on or whatever, but at the end, we want to just do something where we feel fulfilled and happy. I mean, and that's how I check my life now is if I wake up, too many Monday mornings and go to bed Sunday nights where I'm not looking forward to Monday morning, then like I got to make something to change, because I look, 75% of the time, I mean, you can't ever, enjoy everything 100% of the time, but 75% of the time, I can't wait to go to bed Sunday night so that I can wake up Monday morning and get back to it and work and do the things that we're doing. I think, one of the biggest differentiators for Hygieia specifically is technology. My background, with the EMR and even before that in the music industry was tech based. So I created this company called Preda, which analyzes biometric data. So whether through like a wearable,
I'm
so
from Dundalk. Come on now, biometric data. Come
like
on. And you're going EMR. You're not allowed to drop anything.
or okay, EMR is like an electronic medical records. Like you go when you go to the hospital, you see the doctor, you go to your primary care, and they're typing in the computer, they're typing your information into an EMR. And then that's HIPAA. I don't know if you've heard of HIPAA, but that's
That's
protected
my
health.
sports writer side of like why we're not allowed to talk about injuries with John Harbaugh. So there.
Got it.
Hippos are at the zoo. We're going over there next week too. So yes.
But biomet like a Fitbit or an Apple Watch or an Oura Ring, those are all wearables that are, getting heart rate, SpO2, step counts, sleep activity, all
Oh,
this
my
stuff.
wife is has a monitor for diabetes, and her
Yeah.
phone. I mean, the technology part of all of this, even our ability to Zoom together here today, but to learn about when people come in, what are you studying there in regard to things that they couldn't have done 15, 20 years ago?
So it's more for kind of when they leave, to be honest, but we do utilize it while they're in treatment. The idea is so much of success, or where really my like thesis at the beginning when I came up with it was so much of success that first year is maintaining a healthy routine. So go to bed at the same time, wake up at the same time, go to the gym, do whatever. You know, if you follow your routine, generally you feel good. When you don't feel good is when you stop
You
doing the
won't
thing.
have time for drugs. You won't be thinking about that, right? Okay, that
Well,
missing
you're
part,
just
right?
not, you know, you're not following that routine that, you know, made you feel good. And that's usually when you start feeling bad. You stayed out late and whatever the case is. So biometrically, I can see what someone's routine is through algorithms that I developed. And the idea was that anytime somebody goes outside of their routine, that probably is an indicator that there's something not right. So some sort of intervention would be needed. Maybe that's a phone call to say, hey, how you doing? Maybe that's, you know, a relapse and we need to get you back in the treatment. But if we
The
can,
measurements won't lie, but the person will.
yes. And that's the whole, you know, as long as we're getting
That's why we
the,
give piss tests, just in a general sense, right? Like, hey,
exactly.
we'll get the answer, correct?
But, you know, with AI, yes, exactly. But the hope, like we're doing a study right now with Harvard McLean, where we're very confident, we're going to publish it at the end of this year, that we can identify cravings through the ring, through the wearable. And whether people know it or not, anytime before they use, they have a craving. You know, even like if it's sugar, you have a
That's
craving.
physiological, right? That's science, right?
So we can physiologically see through the biometric data when a craving occurs. We do have that formula. Now it's just, can we do it with these kind of devices? And is the battery life strong enough currently that it'll last long enough at the rate that we need to see the data? So, you know, but I think that's, I mean, healthcare as a whole is following that, you know, predictive model than treating. Like, let's figure out through AI, through technology, how we can predict what's gonna happen in the future so we can prevent it. And now it's preventable, as opposed to we're treating it after it's already happened. So, you know, if we can see that someone's having a craving, I can intervene before they use that drug, because they're gonna have that physiological response before they use. Whether they know it or not, could be a minute, could be 5 hours, could be 3 days, but they are going to have that physiological response before they use again. So,
If you've been around town and you've seen Hygieia, Hygiea Healthcare, this is Robbie Stempler. He is the founder of all things Hygieia and helping people with addiction and three centers. Where are your centers right now, Robbie?
currently, one's in Baltimore City off of Bel Air Road. 6415 Bel Air Road. The
That would
other
be
one,
inside the Beltway, about a mile and a half then. Okay, I know my addresses.
right next to the hot pizza spot that Dave Portnoy went to.
Nice. Right at the city line, pretty much, yeah.
Literally right, yeah, right at the city line. Then Middle River is the second location, and then I have a third location in Camp Meade, so it's like right near the airport, right in Linthicum.
What but goal-wise for you, for the state, and at some point I'll have Emily on as well and talk about you and people like you having these centers for the community to help people. Is the next thing a placement in regard to people getting jobs, housing, when people come to you? I mean, there really is a wraparound element of so many of these things. And I speak about this whenever I speak to somebody like you about my wife and being at Hopkins and having cancer and leukemia and all of the women issues, post-drug issues, mental health, just all of that. Man, they throw you out of the cancer center and they put the dipstick in and say, we don't see any cancer. See you later. And it's sort of like, whoa, there's a whole lot of other issue that went on there in 2 years. I would think the same thing would be true for anyone coming to you, that they would come out and have job, money, other gambling, other things, family issues, above and beyond just, hey, I'm not using the drugs anymore, which is the first thing.
Correct.
But it's
Yep.
not the only thing.
No, that's just the solution. That's not even the problem. That was the solution for a while until it stopped working. The goal, I think we need probably 200 to 300, 400 maybe more beds to fill the need that the state's currently experiencing. The detox is really just, I look at it as a hub and spoke model kind of, which is a model that was created in Vermont, but different than what I want to do because theirs was more methadone, like maintenance drug MAT type stuff, which you probably don't know. It's all good. But the detox is the hub that you start at. But then I want to build as many spokes around the state as needed so that we have that step down level of care where we, if we can, the only data that people know is that the longer you stay in a continuum of care, the higher the success rate. That's it. Like there's no other way that anyone's even tracking data. I mean, how would you even define
Time
success?
is the measurement, right?
Yeah, but like, we've been so for so long until, I mean, even so now, this 12-step AA model has been what the norm is. And it's, I mean, an AA, I got sober through AA. So I, I'm not, I think those programs are great. But in the 1930s, when it was created, Bob and Bill, and Dr. Bob and Bill, it was as a last resort. Like you've tried everything else in the world to stop drinking alcohol, but you're still waking up with the bottle in your hand. And before you're like going to blow your brains out, let me try AA. Somewhere along the way, it became like the first solution and what addiction treatment was modeled after. So there hasn't been any data that people have looked at and have studied and analyzed to see, well, what is like the best way to treat this? Like, this isn't a one size fits all type thing. Is this more mental health related or is this more substance use disorder related? If it is it this type of therapy that's better? Or should we, do some CBT or, like humans are all different. We're intricate people. So there can't just be one approach for, this broad, and when that AA was created, like there wasn't OxyContins, there wasn't, this
There's also a
pharmaceutical.
hell of a stigma about it, too.
Yeah. So I have this nonprofit called Fuck the Stigma, that I started a couple years ago, fthestigma.com, where we do podcasts. And we just interview people to try to just break the stigma. I mean, it's literally that's all it is. The stigma is getting better, but it's still out there. I mean, you still talk to people that are like, what? Like,
Well, I mean, but when I hear people say I'm in recovery, that tells me kind of all I need to know is they're offering that up, that they're vulnerable to some degree. I think that that's it's an admission of that. I think it's also an admission of triumph to some degree that we're all trying to get through it. You're trying to get through it as well. Robbie Stempler's here. He's with Hygieia Healthcare. They're local. He's local. Pikesville, Owings Mills, Baltimore. Their locations in Middle River and in on the northeast side of Baltimore, as well as down in the Fort Meade area. You can find them out on the internet. You can find them through me out at Baltimore Positive. Hey man, next time we get together, we'll get a little football in here. We'll get a little sports and some of that. But for anybody out there, if they what is that step to reach to you and your organization? If anybody out there knows somebody, we're doing gambling addiction this month as well. That's another issue. But
the
we're talking
next
about. What's that? That's.
that's the next opioid. And I think telehealth, I'm developing something for that right now, actually, that I'd love to talk to you about at some point.
Well, I mean, but in this
Think that
particular.
is the next big epidemic. Like in 5 years from now, gambling is going to be the new opioid addiction. It's
Well, it has all of the attributes of. coming back every day and getting hooked, right? I mean, I don't think there's any question about that. And we talk about it all the time here about it's got to be fun. If it starts to worry or if it's keeping you up all night, it's a problem, no matter what it is, right? Like literally.
But you can connect with us, hygieia.health, HYGEA, dot health, or call 410-512-9525 24/7. There's someone there to answer. We can take an admission 24/7. Just whatever we can do to help, just trying to do our part and make Baltimore and Maryland a better place.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm gonna reach to Governor Moore as well as Emily. I can reach to Emily anytime. Bring her back on as well. I haven't had her on in about 6 months. We usually try to get together this time of year, talk about things in springtime as well. And you know, it's tough with her because her football team did better than our football team this year. So, and I ain't had to talk about that in like 30 years, which is crazy. So, I'm leaving anybody wearing burgundy and gold. I'm leaving them alone right now. But I am referring to them as the Maryland Commanders just because we're paying for it anyway. So, Robbie, I appreciate you and all the mutual friends we have out there. Keep up doing the great work, and I hope to have you back out maybe for a crab cake sometime soon. We'll do that, all right?
Yeah, my pleasure, and thank you. I appreciate you taking the time.
I appreciate storytelling, man. We've got great stories everywhere here this week. Rick Emmett from the great rock band Triumph joined us this week, as well as John Palumbo. We're just getting all over the place talking about stuff. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on Friday at CVP in Towson, hoping to have some Towson representatives. We were hoping the Tigers were going to make March Madness this year. We've had some great Coppin State visitors this week. We have MEAC basketball action here at AM 1570 with our Coppin State partners as well this week. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour is presented by the Maryland Lottery. I will have the magic eight balls to give away, not just at CVP this week. We're going to be at Pizza John's in Essex next Friday. It's kind of our baseball preview. Luke Jones is going to join us, as well as Dave Shinen from the Washington Post. And for all of you out there, West Siders, South Siders, North Siders, bagging on East Side Pizza. If you haven't been to Pizza John's, come on out next Friday, the 21st. I'll buy you one with the pepperonis with the little cups on it. It'll be delicious. Come on down to Back River Neck Road. We'll be there on Friday giving away magic eight ball tickets and talking Oriole baseball in springtime. I love it. Luke and I are going to be in Toronto 2 weeks from now. I will shave up nice, get my hair out. I'll look like Geddy Lee, and I will have my Canada hat on just so they let me in. God bless us. We're going to war with Canada. I'm Nestor. We are WNSD AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore positive, eh?